Orange and Blue News podcast tonight. We've got Doug Bouchon, Kendrick Prince, and myself here with former Illini basketball player Mike LaTulip. And of course, Mike LaTulip also became Twitter famous this summer because of the TBT. He became the I don't know. He may have gotten more notoriety this summer than he had when he played at Illinois. Who knows? He was like a star, getting interviewed on ESPN right and left. So. But yeah, Mike joins us tonight. Obviously we're going to talk about Illinois basketball and, you know, I got a chance to talk to you a couple weeks ago, Mike, and, you know, we were pretty high in Illinois and then they have two home losses since then. And
so I think you cut out there. I'm sorry, you had
after the two home losses, you know, we talked a little bit ago and we're pretty high in Illinois and then they lose two games in a row at home. And what are your thoughts on Illinois now?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're certainly tested. You know, and I think it was a calming moment for them over the last few games to kind of be able to recalibrate and come in and say, hey, you know, maybe we're not where we want to be right now. And I think having and acknowledging that is the first step, right? You know, and then, you know, being able to understand, hey, we can't come into every game and just say, hey, we're Illinois, we have good players, and the final score will just take care of itself. There is work that has to be done. There are things that you have to do night in and night out. And it's not just game. It's not just, you know, game day. It's in practice. And I think when you have a younger team, you know, I think I was looking at the other day on KenPom, and they're like the 230th, you know, young, 230th oldest team. So one of the more younger teams in college basketball. And with that comes, you know, when you have to rely on a lot of younger guys, them understanding that practice in January matters. You know, everyone's excited for the beginning of the season, November and December, but it's who can really value the dog days in January that makes teams special. And I think, you know, they got punched in the mouth, quite frankly, against Maryland and definitely against Ohio State. And I think they needed it. And I think it's something that's going to propel them as they tackle this tough stretch of the schedule coming up.
Yeah. You mentioned that the dog days of January, I think that's definitely true. And the other part of that is it's even worse maybe this year with all the COVID restrictions. They can't really unwind and get that time away. So it's basically basketball is life, and literally basketball is life right now. I mean, that's really all they have going. Classes start up Monday, so maybe they'll get a little bit of normalcy when that happens. And you mentioned that. How much is the young kids' maturity is such an important part of college basketball? I think we've talked about it before, but how important is that for these young guys to be able to battle through this, the three freshmen especially?
Yeah, I think in this year in particular, like if you don't have leadership on your team, I'm not sure you have a prayer in terms of having a truly successful season or optimizing, you know, the talent that you have on your team. So having a guy like Io in the locker room and having these guys like DeMonte, even Tyler Underwood, who's just been around his dad, knows what his dad wants to see. It makes it easier for those freshmen to just, hey, you know, if I'm Io, I'm, hey, stick right on my hip, follow me, do what I do. And you make it easier to kind of take them under your wing. But also, you know, it's good and bad when you have a younger team, but also if you're a freshman, what do you have to compare this to? You know, maybe if you're a sophomore, you're like, man, I was in front of a packed 17,000, you know, person arena last year. And then now it's empty. For these freshmen, they don't really, you know, this is their college basketball experience so far, which is a shame because I do think that a guy like Andre Curbelo, who is a showman, I truly believe he would be a better player with people in the stands. He feeds off of that. And it's not just Andre. There's a lot of players that are like that. But being able to understand that when you do have a young team that, you know, hey, there are certain things that we need to hurdle. There does need to be a, you know, a deliberate approach when you come to practice, and it's not all ingrained yet. And I think with a shortened off season and then coming right into the season, you know, the teams that are younger and the teams that value culture and value being a good teammate, like those are the teams that are going to hit their stride and late January, February, March. And I think the Illini fall under that umbrella with kind of the makeup of their team. So I can't imagine what, you know, as a freshman you're thinking just in terms of not only basketball, but your college experience. Like it's unlike anything that, you know, that any other player previously in college basketball has experienced.
Yeah, I agree. It's obviously a different year. Ked, you and I got a chance to watch a lot of, you know, Adam Miller and Coleman Hawkins play when they're in high school, and even Curbelo, maybe not as much Curbelo, but a little bit. When you look at these guys, how do you think they're developing from when they were in high school? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's kind of normal. I mean, Coach Underwood's talked to us a number of times about them hitting a wall. I think they've all kind of hit a wall at some point in time. I know Adam Miller, the first couple of games, we thought he was the second coming, and then he went through a wall. And, like, you can slowly start to see him be himself again. And the thing was tough for him as a lot of people, I felt, there was so much pressure on him. And Underwood said that to us before, too. It's like, you know, he's a five-star kid, so people immediately thought he was going to come in and score 20 points a game, and that wasn't going to happen because at that level, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period, which I think he's kind of figured out a little bit because people are defending him a little differently. And then you look at a guy like Coleman Hawkins, which we saw last night. You know, I think if they can get 15 to 17 good minutes out of him a night, productive minutes. Like, he got 3 blocks last night, and he's a lot better defender. I shouldn't say that, shot blocker. You know, that people give him credit for. He rebounds really well. One of the reasons I think he's not seeing a lot of court time is because teams go right at him. You and I were talking last week in the State Farm Center. Ohio State went right at him every time he came in the game. So it's an adjustment period for him as well, but you could slowly see him starting to pick the game up a little bit. He scored 5 points last night and got 3 blocks in limited playing time. You know, I agree with Mike when it comes to Curbelo. You know, that guy is, you know, he's spectacular, but he's a tough guy to coach. For every time he does one or two things well, he'll do something to make you pull your hair out because you're thinking, you know, what is he thinking? And immediately when I see it, I look at Underwood because I want to see his facial expressions because he tells us that's just who he is. You have to take the good with the bad. But I think from a talent standpoint, once he figures out the game and that people at the Big Ten level are 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", and they're all 6'2" centers like it was in high school, he'll be fine. He'll adjust to that a little bit. But I would like to see him improve his mid-range game. He's not a great three-point shooter, but if he could knock down maybe one or two a game and improve his mid-range game, I think the sky's the limit for him.
Yeah, Mike, I guess, Mike, I would say the one thing, his kind of crazy passes are almost like your heat check shots back in the day from 30 feet. You know, it's kind of the same principle. You know, maybe it isn't the best shot, but hey, you're feeling it right then. Maybe it's not the best pass for him, but he's feeling it. So he's going to make that play. That'd be a good comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it's what gets him going. You know what I mean? I think as a shooter, you want to see the ball go through the hoop, and as a playmaker, you want to see plays made. And I think for a guy like him, what he's understanding, and this is what I said this earlier in the season, but especially early on, every turnover, as much as it, you know, drives people insane, every turnover that he makes is getting him closer to understanding what he can and can't do. And not saying what he can and can't do, but what's a smart play and what's maybe one that we keep in the back pocket. So, you know, I'm excited to see his progression because I think he's going to be one of the really, really fun case studies, if you will, throughout his career at Illinois, where, you know, he's going to do some spectacular things as a sophomore and as a junior. And you'll look back to his freshman year and be like, yeah, like we kind of saw that, you know, in glimpses his freshman year. And I think early on in the year, he kind of realized, man, I'm getting to the basket whenever I want. I'm making whatever play I want. And good teams at the high major level, especially in the Big Ten, they'll adjust to that and they'll try to take that away. So I think that's where he's at right now, is understanding, like, man, I can't just go the same speed that I go every single game and try to do the same things. Like, I have to mix it up. And, you know, and I think he's going to learn and it's only going to make him a better player.
Hey, Mike, you guys touched on this when we first started talking, but I'm glad we have a former player on here to address it, and that is, you know, how this all the COVID protocols on how that affects the players, especially mentally. You know, that's something that the fans don't see. It doesn't take place in the public eye. It's behind the scenes, but every day going through those testing protocols and all, everything that they have to do and sacrifice just to be able to play basketball. And Brad wrote a story about this just about a week ago. Do you think some of those periods where they seem like they might have low energy on the court, and I would point out Io DeSumo specifically, you know, he's having a great season. He's an All-American, probably a first-team All-American, but he does go through some spots like he did in the last game where he seems like he's a little bit sluggish. How much is that mental, you think, from the isolation that they've gone through and all these testing protocols?
Well, yeah, I mean, we even went through it with the TBT and having to take tests all the time. And you know, there's a stress level to that, too, I believe, in where, you know, you're putting so much time in the practice facility, and all of a sudden, you know, hey, your game's postponed. Hey, another game's postponed. And I think what that does is you can never fully get into a groove in terms of the season and in terms of a routine and kind of what that looks like. And then now you're, you know, when you look at a 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kid, you know, I remember my time at Illinois, and, you know, I had a lot of teammates that what they looked forward to after a big game was going out and people knowing who you were and knowing what you just did on the court. And I'm not saying that this is a team full of guys that, you know, need to get, you know, their egos stroked to be good basketball players, but, you know, they're human beings. And I think anyone who gets, you know, words of affirmation and, you know, and are in situations where, you know, you see that what you're doing on the court has a direct impact in the community, has a direct impact for the university, that's a big deal. And I think to couple that with being a team that is a top 10, top 15, top 20 team, you don't have the luxury of walking into every game as much as everybody, you know, wants to say, hey, you know, you should be able to get up for every game. You can, but realize that the teams that you're playing also have had your name circled on the calendar for weeks and for months. So it's a completely different mentality, not only being in this COVID like season, but being a team that people want to beat every single night and knowing that if you do beat Illinois, it's a good win. And I think that's a completely different psychology than maybe, you know, in the years past coming into the State Farm Center.
You mentioned that these guys are 18 to 21 or 22-year-old basically kids out in the world for the first time. And I think fans might forget that sometimes. And, you know, in college athletics, the fans have tremendous expectations for performance level of these athletes, and coaches obviously push them to the brink. Do these guys, from a player standpoint, do these guys notice what fans are saying on social media or what stories are being written about them and stuff like that? Because it seems like, you know, they haven't really let up this year, even though I think what Brad wrote about with the COVID stuff, they're going through a lot of stuff and a lot of pressure on them right now, especially this year.
Yeah, I think any player that tells you, any player that has social media, that has Twitter or has Instagram or has any of those social medias, any player that has that and tells you that they completely block out all the noise and don't see anything that's written about them are lying. You know, I think ultimately they see, you know, most of it. And that's another reason why this year is unique, because when you have a two-game losing streak against Maryland and, you know, in their last game against Ohio State, you're only seeing the bad. You're not seeing the people in the stands that are still rooting for you and, hey, like, you know, get them next time type thing. So, you know, you don't have that give and take of, hey, you know, people are still being supportive. They're cheering us on even as we walk off the court against Ohio State, you know, even after a loss. So, yeah, I mean, you know, people do see that. I know for a fact that when I was at Illinois, like that, you know, that got to some guys. I mean, shoot, it got to me. I got backdoored against Purdue in meaningful minutes, and John Octius dunks it. And you know, I get on Twitter after the game. I didn't have to like search my name or anything. It was in my mentions. People were tweeting at me like, how do you have an Illinois jersey on? Like, you know, you shouldn't even be playing here. How do you get on the court? And that's just, I mean, and sometimes you'll have people that are giving you positive reinforcement too, but if you want to pull the curtain back, you're going to see it all. And I talked about that with Myers Leonard one time, where I'm asking him how he battles that, you know, how do you battle you know, pulling back that curtain and exposing yourself to the good, because you're also exposing yourself to the bad. And that's the learning experience for 18 to 20, 21 year old guys. I mean, shoot, even if you're a fifth year senior, that types of stuff, if you're 22, 23 year old, that still gets to you, you know, depending on who you are. So yeah, I mean, it's absolutely something that is real. And I think anyone that tells you that they just completely block out all the noise, are lying.
Mike, let me ask you, you know, you made a comment earlier. When you look at the team overall, I mean, in your honest assessment, do you think this is a top 10 basketball team? Because what a lot of people say, you have two stars. Do you think the supporting cast is good enough for them to legitimately be a top 10 team?
I do. And the reason why I believe that, and that's not just some homer response and, you know, a biased response. The reason I do believe that is because when you look even just analytically, look at the teams who have been top 10 teams over the years. If you can go back any year you want to pull any team out of a hat, any Final Four team, any team that's in the top 10 at the end of the year, you'll see three things. They are either top 10 in the country in offensive efficiency, they're either top 10 in the country in defensive efficiency, or they're top 10 in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. So if you have a team, the national champion type teams are the ones that are right around the top 10 in all three. But you look at Illinois right now, they have the seventh ranked, or I think right after last night, they're the ninth ranked offense in the country. They have a top 25 defense, and they're right around, I think, like the 30 range for in offensive rebounding as well, which is actually an area that they've taken a step back in with the departure of Alan Griffin and even Andres Feliz keeping some of those alive. So I do believe that. I think that, and I think the numbers prove that. It's weird because they may not be a team right now that meets that eye test, but the way I look at it is they're a team that when they put it together, when they find their identity, when they start playing for 40 minutes consistently night in and night out, they already have the talent and they have the numbers to back up the fact that they are a good team. So those are the dangerous teams that, hey, man, once we put it together, you know, you're looking at a team that I think has a ceiling of a Final Four, you know, and all that's predicated on the tournament. Like, do you have a team that's suited to, hey, no matter who your opponent is, you can win games, no matter how you win it, just win the game. I think I was talking to Brad about this before. Go back and look at Butler when they went to the national championship in 2011. The second time they went to the national championship, first round game, they played Old Dominion and won 61-59 on a tip in at the buzzer. And if that doesn't go in, you know, are you looking at Butler differently? Probably. You're not looking at them as a national champion type team. So all that stuff will play out. And like I said a couple of days ago, if the issues that they have right now in January are still issues in March, that's a problem. But what you at least have now is a team that has shown that they're capable of being that top 10 team. And the beauty of it is it's on them to change it, as opposed to, hey, we need some things to happen in the conference for us to get into the NCAA tournament, you know, for us to win a game in the NCAA tournament. They have the pieces, and I firmly believe that.
Do you think that they're missing anything? Is there one piece that you'd like to see them improve on? For me, personally, it's the team free throw percentage. But yep. Is there something you see, maybe the same thing or something differently?
Yeah, I think there's two things that stick out. You hit the nail on the head with free throw percentage, and that's you know, and not to get off on a side tangent here, but that's the reason why the crowd that says, why don't we just throw it into Kofi every single time down the floor? There's a reason you can't do that. And there's a reason why him shooting 73% in Big Ten play right now is because they're using him in the right way. You use him to maybe stop a run. You use him, you know, when you need to get a good shot. And it's putting him in a position to be successful, because you want your big man, your 7-foot-1 center, to be shooting 70%+ from the field. And credit Coach Underwood for putting him in that position, and credit his teammates for seeing that mid-game and, hey, we need to go into Kofi. But by no means can you make that your game plan, because he's a, you know, I think after last night his percentage for sure went up, but he's a 55-60% free throw shooter. And that's not the guy that you want shooting the majority of your free throws. So as much as this team, you know, has, you know, it's weird. They're the 14th ranked team in the country in shooting the three. But you look at a lot of guys like Damonte Williams, who doesn't get to the line often, but shoots the three well. Adam Miller doesn't get to the line often, but shoots the three well. So your free throw percentage is largely predicated on Georgie's getting fouled down low, Kofi's getting fouled down low, Io has the ball in his hands enough and Curbelo has the ball in their hands enough. And whatever those four free throw percentages are probably going to be your free throw percentage. So in addition to that, you know, I think, you know, they need to be a team that it's amazing watching Ohio State and thinking, man, EJ Liddell would fit in pretty well on this team. You know, putting him at the four, you have some more length, he can step out. That's kind of what this team is missing, because you're asking a lot of Demonte to night in and night out. I know he didn't start last game, but night in and night out, give up 5 to 6 inches. You know, and when you run into the Ron Harper Juniors of the world, that's a problem. Like, and that's not on Demonte. He's a heck of a defender. He's a great player. But having a guy who would be a versatile four-man who can step out, block shots, knock down threes, and create mismatch problems, that's what I think this team is missing. But with that being said, they have the pieces to, you know, to still have a heck of a season.
The Penn State game obviously was a we talked about before we went on the air, a little bit much better energy and a better start, obviously. What do you think about the slow starts? What causes a team to have some consistently slow starts? Illinois had, you know, in some of these games. I mean, the Ohio State game, man, it was sleepwalking in that first half a lot.
Yeah, I think it's funny to look at it from a psychological standpoint, but the really, really good teams will impose their will over 40 minutes. So even if it's not a great start, you know, you're still in a good position to win the game. The reason why, and there's a lot of reasons for it, but namely, you got to think, if there's a team coming in to play Illinois, or even if Illinois is coming to town, all the buildup that leads to the game, you are going to be at your peak level of focus. You're going to be at your peak level of intensity and toughness at the beginning of the game. Like that's just kind of naturally as humans what happens. And that's why you see some of these great starts from these other teams. But if you're a great team, you know, which I think Illinois is getting there, and I think they are a good to great team, you know, the start doesn't matter, because it eventually over the course of the game, you'll be able to impose your will. But you're right. I think they've had moments this year in the Baylor, the second half against Baylor, Rutgers second half, like they were reactionary and they were waiting to see just how hard the first punch would be thrown as opposed to throwing it. You know, and I think that's what they've done in some of the start of these games is, you know, I think they're waiting to see how hard that punch is going to be as opposed to stepping into the ring and delivering the knockout to start the game. And they've had games like that. I mean, they had a great start last night. So it's not like it's an every game thing, but it's something that they definitely need to, you know, to shore up. And you're going to have teams that come out hot every game. You know, that's just the nature of playing in the Big Ten. Like, there's good teams. I mean, Ohio State was a top 20 team. Like, they did what a top 20 team should do. But Illinois being a top 20 team needs to do those things as well. So, that's kind of my way of looking at it, I guess, you know, from a psychological standpoint and just from a player standpoint as well.
I know we talked about the freshman a little bit earlier, but I just want to touch a little bit more on that. Like, when you went through, like, your freshman year, and two things I'd like you to touch on real quick. How, you know, we got two guys. Adam Miller's built like a truck, so he's strong, and you know, but even he has to adjust to the strength of your guys. But guys like Hawkins and Curbelo, they're not very big and not very strong. How difficult is it to play through that strength? And what's it like physically going through the grind of the season for a guy who's maybe not quite as strong?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to a guy that came into Illinois at 150 pounds, so I can tell you firsthand what that's like going up against Brandon Paul and Ravonte Rice, who at the time was like 280. So I was giving up a lot of weight to him, But you're right. I think that the difference between, you know, even if you have a guy like Adam Miller, who I would have killed to have Adam Miller's body my freshman year of college, but it really, to me, it doesn't matter how built you are. It's, hey, can you utilize it? And can you utilize it in the right way? And I think what you see is the difference between Andre Curbelo and Adam Miller, you know, right out of the gates, you could see that Adam could defend. His issue at times was he in the right spot? And when you're not in the right spot, typically you're either overhelping or not helping enough. You're putting yourself out of position. You get fouls. Where Andre Curbelo is struggling as a guy that You know, and he took one last night, I believe. I don't know. I think it was off the ball, though. But the thing that I'd love to see him do, like when you are an undersized player, you got to make it easier on yourself. And you can't think that you're just at 165 pounds going to just chest a guy and he's going to pick up his dribble. Not in the Big Ten. So how do you combat that? Two things. One, Andre Curbelo, like he has to be, and he's savvy enough because he can see it. If he starts taking charges on the ball, where he can, like, you don't have to completely cut the guy off. If you make two slides and get the angle, I promise you the other guy will do the rest and will go through you and you'll get an offensive foul. And what that does is it helps you out because you're no longer the guy that is constantly getting driven on because people don't want to drive on you because they don't want to get fouls. Like it's this game that you have to play as an undersized player, but also it's finding those angles. And what Andre is struggling with right now is he is trying to cut his guy off by getting into his guy's body. And when you're 165 pounds, that creates a collision. Like an actual collision. And anytime there's a collision, there's a foul called. And if you're the guy whose chest is going into a guy's shoulder, you're getting the foul. As opposed to Adam Miller, who when he creates a collision, he's so stable and has such a good core and is strong enough to where it doesn't create like this separating collision. So fouls aren't called as often. So for Andre Curbelo, he has to be able to get to beat a guy to a spot instead of beating the guy to his body. So that's where he can improve on, but it's a struggle. And even when you get through the grind of a 30 plus game season in the Big Ten, you know, you're going against Big Ten players every single day in practice too. So that can wear on you. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Like that's something to look at for these guys that, you know, maybe even Coleman Hawkins, like he's athletic enough to block some shots, but you know, right now you probably wouldn't say, hey, we love our chances with Coleman Hawkins just getting back down under the basket. He's just not at that point yet, but he will. So that's kind of my takeaways from those guys and being a freshman and being undersized and how to combat that.
Mike, I don't know how closely you follow basketball recruiting for Illinois, but it's kind of been a struggle. Obviously Luke Goody's a very good get. I mean, he's skilled, talented, does a lot of things on the floor, and he's having a great senior season. But they've struggled to fill some spots. What do you attribute that to? Obviously, knowing the coaching staff, these guys are known as good recruiters, and they brought in some really great players on the roster now. What do you attribute to maybe the struggles here in this 21 class that we've seen?
Yeah, I think ultimately there's a lot of, you know, you could go down the line of a lot of different programs that I think, you know, you look at, let's look at Georgetown, right? And you think, hey, Patrick Ewing, kids are going to be lining up to go play for Patrick Ewing. The kids who were born in 2001 did not watch Patrick Ewing. And so there's certain things that are a draw for certain schools, but you can throw all that out of the window if you're not a successful program, if you're not winning. You know, I think it would hold more weight at a school like Georgetown. Hey, yes, you have Patrick Ewing and we're competing for Big East titles year in and year out. Guys are going to want to go play for those types of teams. I think, you know, last year people saw a glimpse of it. You know, it's a shame that there wasn't an NCAA tournament, that they're like, oh, you know, Illinois may have something there. I think you're still probably a year to two out from people being like, that's a winning program. That's a program I want to go to. We're going to win games. Cause I think that does hold weight for recruits. And also, you know, I think being able to see it's the gift and a curse with having a lot of talent on your team. Is, you know, there's high school guys that are sitting there and their parents are saying, well, why are you going to go to Illinois? Like they already have that IO kid and they just brought in that Adam Miller kid. And are you going to, like, how much are you going to play? So that now it goes more to, hey, can we get a culture fit? Can we get a guy that's willing to come in and come off the bench his freshman year and be a part of a program and move forward with the culture? Cause when guys like IO leave, you got to hope that the guys that have, you know, played with IO carry on that leadership. So I look at this class, I think Goody is a guy that, you know, I've actually said it over the years. I'm like, God, they just need like a 6'6" shooter. Like, you know, a guy that can shoot and space the floor, but also, I mean, DeMonte can shoot it this year, but he's 6'3". So you having a guy that's 6'6" like Goody is and can go out there and, you know, shoot the ball, but also be on the other end and have length and be able to guard maybe a four man and not be giving up 5 to 6 inches. So I'll be interested to see how they close out this 21 class. Obviously, what is it? Is it Etienne? Is it Mac Etienne was one of the guys that they missed out on, which would have been a great fill-in as I would imagine this will be Kofi's last year. So it'll be interesting how they fill in that class. They may have to hit the transfer market. I know, is it Burnett, the guy from Texas Tech would be another great fill-in, once Iowa leaves. And so they'll be in a good spot. I think Illinois' success may actually end up holding more weight for transfers than it does for high school recruits. So we'll see how that all plays out. But they're on the right track to be a program where people can point to and be like, boom, successful college program.
Hey, Mike, just my last question here real quick. How much of interaction do you have with the current coaches? And, I mean, are you able to go to the practices or see anything, or do you just stay away from it and just kind of watch it from afar?
Well, I mean, I actually got to – they weren't my coaches, but I got to know them, pretty well over the years. And then, obviously, with TBT, being able to chat with them. And, I talked a lot with Coach O, with Orlando, when it came to – landing Andres Feliz for that team. And then Coach Underwood and I have talked, before we talked during the tournament to the TBT, and we'll exchange texts every now and then. And even some of the guys are on the team. Like, I was there for Trent's recruiting visit. I remember sitting in the locker room with him and being like, hey, what's your top three right now? Here's why you got to come to Illinois. And then Io too is another guy that I'll exchange texts with every now and then. I do have a line into the program, but I try to obviously stay, keep my distance, let them do their thing. I went to a practice back in 2018, so before the 2018-2019 season. So it was nice to see them up close and just see kind of a different style and see, a different coaching staff, and see how everyone does it differently. Like, I had Coach Gross and then I had Coach Nagy for 1 year, but it is really interesting seeing how everyone does it differently. But I think those guys are great. I think Illinois is in a great spot in terms of who they have at the helm and all the guys that are kind of buying into this player-led program, because that's what the good ones do. That's what the Villanovas do. That's what the Virginias do. The teams that are at the top year in and year out have to be player-led, holding each other accountable type programs. So I think that's what Illinois is building here.
Well, thanks, Mike. Appreciate you coming on tonight on Orange Blue News Podcast. Very, exciting Illinois basketball season. Seems like people are hitting you up a lot, so it's good stuff. It's fun to watch. It's obviously been an enjoyable season. Hopefully, we get to see an NCAA tournament that Illinois competes in. It's been a while, so that'll be good. We'll wrap this up for Kedrick Prince, Doug Bouchon. Thanks, Mike LaTulip. Orange Blue News Podcast appreciate you guys listening.